Hey everyone, so welcome back to the third episode of The World in a Satin Bag, this being Chapter 3. Just a quick note about progress. Received another donation for the last episode, which is really awesome. I appreciate that. We are even closer to the first milestone, so hopefully more of you will give me a dollar or whatever. So anyway, I will shut up now and get straight into it. Chapter 3, The Satin Bag. Dinner's ready. James heard his mother's voice over the clatter of dishes. He rolled over, slow at first, but then a little faster. His head still throbbed and made him dizzy if he moved too quickly. He rubbed his eyes with one hand and lightly touched the bump on his head with the other. It had made a nice home there, hard and round and painful. But he was alive, and the bump would go away eventually. A few hours had passed since his parents had had their argument. He had spent the time watching the ceiling and contemplating his next course of action, knowing that he had no choice but to question his parents. The thought made a pit in his stomach. He might have to call them liars or accuse them of being involved to their faces. The fact that he had overheard things he wasn't even supposed to know might lend him the leverage he needed to get the rest out of them, but that didn't make things any easier. The council, whoever they were, wouldn't allow his parents to leave because of what they knew, and he doubted that they would give him better treatment. He had never paid much attention to who came and left Woodton, but the more he thought about it, the more he realized that not many people went elsewhere. James stretched, careful not to strain himself. Crimson caught his attention, and when he looked over, he was shocked to see the cloth still tied around his arm. He flinched, remembering its fiery glow in the manor, but the cloth was like any other piece of fabric, quiet and inanimate. He had forgotten all about it. Yet the cloth's presence wasn't the most unusual thing for James. The cloth was clean. Where there had been bloodstains, the original dark red shined anew. Most of all, his arm didn't ache, and he was surprised that he hadn't noticed before. He pulled at the knot, hoping it might release now, and he could finally be rid of the thing. When it didn't work, he opened a nearby desk drawer and produced a pocket knife, flicking the blade out and awkwardly folding his arm to reach it under the cloth. The instant the blade touched the fabric, it tightened like a snake. The knife fell from his hands, and he tore at the cloth with his fingers as it began to cut off the circulation in his arm. A moment later, the cloth loosened, the design of St. Brendan's cross shimmering. James swallowed hard, his heart race thumping against his chest. This is insane. I must be losing my mind. The thought was absurd. He was far too logical to succumb to insanity. The events of the last day weren't logical, though. He knew that. If not for the words he had overheard his parents saying, he might have even believed that he had dreamed everything in his light-headed stupor. But when he thought about that strange word, his apprehensions and doubts fell away. Angtholand. The door swung open, revealing his mother with a tray. He didn't have to get up. Dinner in bed. She had brought him a glass of water, a bowl of pudding, and some sort of mushy soup the color of rotten apples. James nodded and sat down. He chewed his lip to hide his growing distaste. Soup had never been his favorite meal. He could never eat it properly. His mother would say, "Don't slurp," or "Close your mouth when you swallow," at the dinner table. No matter how hard he tried, he would always dribble down his chin or miss his mouth entirely. He relished the day when soup no longer existed. "Besides, you should be resting, understand?" She set the tray down on the bed. James gave in and climbed back into bed. While his mother set the tray over his lap, he saw her eye the red cloth. "It won't come off," he demonstrated by tugging the fabric. She refused to look at it, arranging his napkin and silverware carefully on the tray. "Did you get it from the manor?" "Yes. I've tried getting it off, but the knots won't come undone, and it doesn't like my pocket knife." She looked at him then. They made eye contact, and he saw the concern flashing in her eyes. "Let me see." She reached out and tried to untie the knot. When that failed, she tried harder, but it wouldn't budge, and she gave in. "That's what you get for stealing, I suppose. Why did you have to tie the knot so tight?" "Laura tied it." "Yes. Well, Laura will be getting a talking to by her mother, I imagine. Now eat your soup, and I'll get some scissors." She scurried out of the room before he could explain why the scissors would only make things worse. James poked at the steaming bowl of goo. It looked strangely like a browned clam chowder, but there were chunks of chicken, peas, carrots, and something that resembled cauliflower in the mix. Eventually he gave in and started to eat, wolfing down the meal and practically inhaling the water. When he had finished, his mother returned, brandishing a pair of scissors with shiny black handles. She had a fierce determination on her face. If she had been someone other than his mother, James would have been frightened. She stood like a murderer in a movie, shadow tracing along the ground in a long line as light from the hall poured in over her shoulders. "Mom, that won't work. I tried to use my pocket knife and—" "You mean the one you're not supposed to have?" His shoulders slumped. She was right. It was supposed to be locked up in the garage except when he went out fishing with his father. She walked to his side. Now keep still. She tried to work the pointed edge under the cloth, but it tightened violently, pushing the point of the scissors away and against his exposed flesh. He yelped in pain. Blood welled under the blade. His mother withdrew with a knee-jerk reaction. See? I told you. She didn't look at him, focused instead on the cloth. James wondered what was going through her mind. Maybe she knew about the thing on his arm, just as she and his father knew about Hanser Manor. Now, he knew, was as good a time as any, and he breathed deep before saying, Mom, you can't stop hiding whatever it is you're hiding. Her brow curled upwards, a confused look that he found difficult to distinguish from mockery. Their eyes met again. I overheard you and Dad. Now her face was full of fear. That eye you were talking about? I think I've seen it. His mother bolted upright and buried her face in her hands. Oh, God. Her voice was muffled by sobs. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry for having to raise you here. Your father and I knew you'd get caught up in all this, too. Ever since last night, when Hanser Manor lit up, the council knew it was coming. Knew what was coming? A disappearance? She nodded. Every 30 years, never sooner or later. Curiosity always leads children to trouble, but it only comes every 30 years, and those fool bastards on the council have refused to sever the link. I don't understand. His hands clenched the edge of his blanket. She kept her back to him. One who sees the eye is selected to enter the world beyond, Anktheland. Anktheland is another world? Yes, but there's never been two in the same cycle. Never! She fidgeted with her leg for a moment, clawing at an invisible nuisance. Ancient stories say Anktheland was a wonderful place, but whomever the eye belongs to has dragged that place into darkness. Hanser Manor sits on the rift between the worlds, and every 30 years the cycle begins anew. The things left over in that place are all connected, and some of them play into his hands, magic and trapped spirits and portals. James dropped his jaw in disbelief. Laura had been taken to another world. That meant she might be safe after all. The eye stole people away. It didn't kill them. Hanser Manor is the only connection left to Anktheland. There used to be other connections before my time, but they were all severed from the other side. The council controls the last. That's what they are supposed to do anyway. I think some hope that the old stories will come true again, but most are looking for power. What is the council? It was created when the first settlers moved here and discovered that the Hanser grounds, or the area where the grounds are now, was connected to Anktheland. They built the manor and formed a sort of secret society to govern what happened with it. The original owners of the manor supposedly went to Anktheland and returned with gifts. But that was about the time when the eye took control, and dark things began to happen in the house. The owners died, and the council boarded up the place and condemned it. James swallowed. Laura isn't coming back, is she? His mother turned. No, James. I'm afraid not. Nobody would dare go to Anktheland willingly. The last man who tried never came back. The council forbids anyone to go. They're fearful of what might happen if those from the other side learn how to cross over. Laura is lost. I'm sorry. He held back his tears. And now, his father said, appearing around the corner, like us, you can't leave this town. What if we do? James directed a defiant look at his parents, his eyes narrow and angry, and his chest rising like a beast moments before its death lunge. They'll kill us. This is a secret too great to let the world know. His parents closed the distance between them. His mother leaned into his father's grasp, looking at that moment like a confused child. We'll have to bring you before the council tomorrow. The strength left her voice. She was little more than a whisper in a wind-filled field. How do they keep this secret? It'd be too easy to let the information out. His father laughed and shook his head. You don't think I spend my day fiddling with HTML and blogs, do you? Everything is filtered. The council wanted there to be a way to keep everything controlled, just in case something sneaks through. I helped design the online filters. And now I can never leave? He scowled. His mother slid her face away from his father's chest. You're just going to have to learn to live with it. James grumbled and pushed the tray away from him. The glass clattered to the floor, but it was empty and had little effect beyond making noise. They're giving up on Laura so fast. They don't care. He hated the feeling of helplessness building in his stomach. It made his skin tingle and hot and his mind furious with abandon. They had let all those children get stolen away from the world and played a role in covering up the remnants, disheartened and terrified parents and people who simply knew too much for their own good. It didn't matter to him that Anktheland sounded dangerous. There, magic existed in unimaginable quantities. The leftover fragments in Woodton were a taste of what was beyond, weak, withdrawn, and tied, he realized, to the manor and its rift. Latin magic, beyond touch and sense. Here the magic lingered like a symptom, immense only every 30 years, but weak when drawn away from its link. But in Anthaland, he imagined, it blazed like fire, bathing the landscape in its terror and, once before, in splendor. Yet as terrifying as all that sounded, he couldn't help seeing Laura's face and thinking about the cowards that had led to her disappearance and were now sweeping her existence under the rug. His parents and the council considered her lost. Maybe her parents held a similar opinion, but he wouldn't give up on his friend. She might still be alive, and someone might still be able to save her. Laura would do the same for me. Whatever you're thinking, stop. His mother had gathered her courage again. Laura's lost. You have to accept that now. Your parents must accept it, too. You're all cowards. The words slipped from him. It was too late to catch his tongue. But if they hurt his parents, they showed no indication. Once more, they were both calm and collected. His father came closer, knelt, and put his hands on James' shoulders. James refused to make eye contact, afraid of what he might find in those brown pools. I know this is a lot to handle. I didn't take it well when I was your age, either. But you have to understand that this is how it has to be. No man who has ever gone searching has ever returned. The council is absolute. What they say goes. James pushed his father away. Listen to us, James, his mother pleaded with him. James couldn't stand it. He suddenly hated them, breathed hard breaths, and pursed his lips to show it. We don't even know how to get to Anthaland. Even if we wanted to send someone after her, we wouldn't know what to do. I do, James lied. He spat the words as if they were weapons. This, he indicated the cloth around his arm. It's connected somehow. His father shook his head. That will come off soon enough, and it will be destroyed. The cloth squeezed, as if aware of the threat to its existence. James rubbed it like a pet. It loosened and calmed. You could at least pretend like you care that Laura is gone. You've done nothing but give up on her from the start. The most we can do is beg the council to do something. His mother shifted uneasily. At best, we'll be able to get the council to block that place off so no more children can get in. It should have been blocked off long ago. Negligence. James glared at the two of them. I'm sorry, son. The apology appeared genuine in his father's eyes. But this is the best we can do. His father paused to pick up the tray and the glass. I have to make a phone call. You need to get more rest. We'll finish this in the morning. Then he stood and left the room, followed tentatively by his mother. The door closed gently behind them. James found that all he could do was glare at the wall. His entire world had been flipped upside down overnight, and the two most supportive people in his life were telling him to let it go. He wanted to let his anger and frustration take over. It took every last bit of restraint he had to stop himself from striking his wall in a fit of rage. The cloth seemed to agree with his attitude, gently squeezing and releasing with little ripples along his flesh. His fear of the cloth disappeared then, and his feelings towards it were taken over by an immediate fondness. Something told him the cloth meant him no harm, if indeed it had intentions at all. It was as if a voice he could not hear had sung a sweet lullaby to calm his nerves. What am I going to do? They're all cowards, all of them. James had never been one to be rash, but here he found himself thinking of the most absurd plans to help Laura. One involved forcing the council to go and rescue Laura themselves, but these were men and women who were willing to kill to keep their secret. They would no more listen to a child than his parents' plea for mercy. Yet, the idea of a bunch of old, grumpy men being forced to rescue Laura brought a grim satisfaction to his senses. His thoughts were interrupted by his father's voice booming down the hall. He sat in bed and listened, barely able to make out the muffled words through the door. "Damn them! Their negligence has gone too far, Mary," he heard his father say. "We have to do something now. Yes, I know the consequences, but do we have much of a choice? Ruth's daughter is gone, and my son nearly fell into the trap, too. The council is old, and I won't submit my son to their archaic garbage. The council is full of old thinking. They want to preserve, but we have to destroy. Who is Mary? Another woman who had lost her child? A council member? My wife was right. We can at least attempt to set the insides on fire. The structure itself would survive, but all the artifacts will be lost. The council just might believe it was teenagers or drug dealers. That's the best way. Silence. Yes, this is a secure line. Don't worry. Can you be there in an hour? Good. See you there. Bye. James heard his father slam the receiver down. He'd never heard his father this angry before. What had the council said when his father had called them? His stomach clenched as the answer came to him. Maybe they had sentenced him to death. Or maybe they were going to use him for something else, something against his will. He sunk down into his bed and stared at the ceiling again. The cloth nudged his arm. He ignored it, moving his thoughts to the back of his mind. He saw logic floating there, locked away where his courage rested, entombed by his overwhelming fears. Hastily, he topped out of bed, ignoring his head when it protested with weak throbs. From his closet, he found his backpack, inside of which he stuffed clothes and other supplies. Then he covered himself in his winter clothes, gloves, his jacket, and his waterproof hiking boots. He contemplated sneaking into the kitchen and stuffing some food into the bag, but he knew his parents would catch him and foil his plans. But he wouldn't leave without them knowing what had happened to him. As much as he despised them for abandoning Laura, they were still his parents. The same people who had raised him to 13. The same people who supported him and loved him and welcomed his love in return. He wouldn't do to them what Laura's disappearance undoubtedly did to her parents. The note didn't take long to write. He scribbled a few words down, explaining everything, reread it, and left it on the dresser. It was a short note, but he didn't have time for a longer letter with more details. He had to act fast or his parents would take away his only shot at saving his friend. "She's my best friend, and I won't abandon her. Never. All they need to know is that I've gone looking for her." His parents were engaged in conversation outside his door, and he knew he didn't have any more time to linger. He slid the window all the way open and dislodged the screen from the frame. Careful of his head, he lifted himself up and through and landed on the gravel driveway with a crunch. Then he headed for the road and the forest and field trails on the opposite side. He knew the way to Hanser Manor. 3 different trails led to the same area. The brown tips of the grasses tickled his arms when he entered the main trail across from his home. By the time he reached the second field on the other side of the woods, dusk had come, drenching the golden fields in wide black shadows and the forest in pitch as the remaining rays of light dwindled beyond the horizon. He took several side trails, hoping to cut the distance in half, but the darker it became, the sooner he had to admit that he had gotten himself lost. He'd taken back roads and shortcuts before, but always in daylight. James turned about, trying to find his bearings. He heard the sound of a car nearby and headed in that direction. Moments later, he stumbled onto Spooner Street, some distance north of the Hanser grounds. The grounds were a short walk from the end of Spooner through a thin, wooded area. He continued along the side of the road, keeping to the ditch and ducking into the trees when he thought he heard a car or saw a light. More than once, it was a late-night biker risking the cold for a little exercise. After a while of walking, tired and sweaty, he could see where Spooner ended in a T-section on Main Street, and where the woods and the edge of the grounds began. He walked, now a little more excited and nervous than before. Main Street came closer and closer. His heart started to race. He peered back for a moment. No other cars were coming. I'm going to make it. The screech of tires forced him to turn back around. A silver car roared down Main Street, slipping on the icy road. James knew it was too late to run for the woods. Whoever it was had already seen him. The car pulled up and slid to a sideways halt, leaving 2 thick trails of burnt rubber in its wake. The putrid scent hit his nose. Another car screeched up behind the silver one and made a smoother stop. A man in a long bathrobe climbed out of the silver car. He had frazzled, balding gray hair and a small pot belly. The man hobbled a little before looking back to the second car. He knew his parents were in the second car before they opened the doors and got out. His father's face was scrunched up and red. His mother had tears in her eyes, her lips were thin and straight, and her brow was lined where worry had worked its way into her skin. All 3 people walked towards him. James looked to the woods and then at his parents. He gauged the distance in his mind, trying his best to think of a way to get to the manor. His mother came within a few feet of him, saw his eyes, and stopped. "James, please listen!" A stream of tears poured from her face. "Please, you can't go!" "Your son is beyond reason, Allison," the robed man said. "He must be brought before the council and dealt with." "No, I won't allow it. I know how you people deal with problems." "That's not going to happen, Mr. Aldridge." James's father butted into the conversation. His fists were clenched. "Philip, he's out of control. What do you suggest? Just let him wander the town? There are people here that don't know our secret. What if they knew? We can't stop a whole town from leaving all at once. We haven't the manpower. And if he tries to force his way to the other side, what then? Imagine what the Eye could do here." Mr. Aldridge wheezed. "I don't know what to do, but if you do what you're suggesting, you'll have a bigger problem to deal with." "Are you threatening the council?" "I'm simply telling you the truth." Mr. Aldridge grimaced, and then scuttled forward. From within his robes, he produced a revolver and pointed the obsidian barrel directly at James. James jumped back, staring into Mr. Aldridge's crazy eyes. Mr. Aldridge opened his mouth. The words never came, cut short by James's mother, who burst forward and grabbed at the gun. "Mom! Allison!" His father stumbled forward to help. Mr. Aldridge threw his mother aside and took 2 thundering bounds forward. The cold barrel froze his cheek, and a strong, pudgy hand gripped his arm. Again, Mr. Aldridge opened his mouth as if to say something, and again he was interrupted. The cloth convulsed, and then a surge of something, some energy, some force, crashed against Mr. Aldridge's hand, and he let go. James looked up into the man's surprised gaze. The moment barely registered before a bright flash of light crashed into Mr. Aldridge and launched him into the air high through the thick brush of trees. A loud crunch ended his screams. The gun clattered to the ground, and the cloth became calm once again. James looked down at his arm, and then at his parents, bewildered. Their eyes were reproachful, but they were also full of fear. He stepped towards them. His mother reached for him, questioning the action, and withdrew her shaking hands. Tears streamed down her face, and her knees buckled, leaving her as a crying mess on the cold road. He had nothing to say, but he touched her gently on the arm in apology. His father only watched him as he passed his parents in the two cars. When he reached the woods, he was at a loss. A terrible feeling of guilt rose from the bottom of his stomach and made residence in his throat. He tried to push the feeling aside, but it remained, aching and pushing at his insides. But he couldn't stop now, not after all that had happened. Nothing could turn him back. Not now. "James," his father said, trying to seem soft and unthreatening, "look what has already happened. Aintholan only brings evil." James kept walking. His father followed, but stopped short of touching his shoulder, and then could go no farther as if a force kept him at bay. "James, listen to me!" Something spoke to his mind. He paused, trying to hear it more clearly, and heard a whispering voice say, "Go," deep and airy. Not evil, but soothing. He pressed on. Limbs and brush seemed to bend before him as he made his way through the woods to the Hanser grounds. Trees creaked and groaned, their lifeless forms pushed out of the way by the same force that had thrown Mr. Aldridge into the air. The sound of the branches cracking frightened him. He heard his parents' voices ringing in the distance. His chest burned with more guilt. Then he broke the cover of the woods and saw the Hanser Manor looming like a monstrous caterpillar of shadow. Someone had boarded up the window he and Laura had climbed through. He searched for a rock, found one with a pointed end, and approached the window. The boards were thick and nailed tight to the wall. He smashed the rocks into the board over and over until the wood splintered. He kicked the weakened boards out one by one, opening the way into the manor. His head no longer made him dizzy, but he rested for a brief moment just to be safe. He heard his parents' voices again. They were closer now, and when he looked back to the woods, he could see them running after him. He slipped inside to the sound of their screams. The satin bag was where it had been left, beckoning him to move closer. He did, reaching down and yanking it up to his face. He looked inside and saw darkness for a moment. Then the bag shuddered, and the same inhuman roar ripped through the air. James dropped it as flames erupted from the opening, blocking his vision just as the ice-blue, crimson-barked eye came into view. The statues and little trinkets woke too, circling the room again. This time, James stood his ground. The two fire serpents roared to life from the flames and slithered toward him, re-scorching the floor. His cloth fluttered and burst into bright, red light, sending out waves of invisible force. The serpents hissed fire and were pushed back, and then one giant blast of energy sent things flying into walls. The flames faded from red and orange to a faint blue. The blue flames touched him, attracted to him now, and warmth encompassed him. He bathed in it, closing his eyes and grinning. The sensation of flying overcame him. He opened his eyes and found himself in a great moving tunnel that gleamed with a myriad of transitioning colors. Clouds passed along and rays of white spilled through from beyond. His cloth grew brighter and covered him in pale shadows. He closed his eyes again. Thunderous booms shook the tunnel and he opened his eyes once more. Waves of magic rumbled against the walls, moving like a tide towards him. The cloth pushed back, shattering the blasts into disparate colors, but the waves increased in numbers and the booms shook the tunnel. The tunnel cracked in half. A wave hit him like a 100-pound weight, knocking the air out of him. It shoved him backwards, and his cloth strangled the rest with shadow, sending them into the black nothingness above. Then a massive wave came through the tunnel. The tunnel collapsed around him when the wave struck, dissolving into black. His cloth sent one last blast of shadow outward, encasing him in a protective shield. The shadow shook and cracked. Sunlight appeared in long, white rays, and a green expanse stretched out before him. James landed with a soft thud in a field of tall, emerald and golden grass. He lay there for a while, admiring the sun above and smelling the fragrant aroma of flowers he had never smelled before. The gentle silence of nature whisked away all the ringing in his ears. Finally, he sat up. A wide pasture of green and tan grasses, rivers, hills, forests, and mountains stretched before him. In the distance, buried in the mountains, he could see waterfalls and snow. A lake shimmered to his left and more hills to his right. A wide forest of gnarled trees rose up behind him. Nestled against its edge was a city, walled, tall and ancient. Two amazing towers, spired and golden, rose up in the center, connected by a stone bridge. James sat in awe. Angphaland, he said. And that's it. That is chapter 3. Chapter 4 will go up tomorrow, barring disaster, like such as my house burns down or a tornado hits me. Which, going right now, we've had enough tornado warnings, I guess, in Gainesville the last couple months, that, and tornadoes touching down all over the place. Who knows? It could happen. So, yeah, so if you enjoyed it, please let me know. I know I'm kind of getting these out really quick, but I wanted to have it all really done fast. So, yeah, I hope you enjoyed it, and I will see you guys tomorrow with the next episode. And, of course, I'm going to be sweetening the pot and changing things a little bit, not with the book, but just in terms of, like, sort of sweetening the pot about donations. So look forward to that. I'll post about that tomorrow. All right, you guys, have a great one.